you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. Susan Arthur, is there any topic that has been more popular among our listeners and about which we hear questions wherever we go? It's about the issue of money. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that has generated more concern, more worry, more planning?
Money is top of everyone's mind sometimes.
You know, it's funny. I think it may even top the subject of health. Mm-hmm. I mean, health is a big issue on this show. We've had a lot of experts regarding many aspects of health, paying for health and of course, how do you stay healthy, what type of doctors, and we've had a variety of experts that have come and spoken on different things. But the issue of having the money to survive when you retire, I don't think there's anything that presses more heavily on our listeners' minds. So introduce the guest that we are having back this week, who let me say is somebody who is very popular from a previous appearance on the show, and we've managed to get him back. Tell us about our guest.
Well, our guest today is Mark Werner. He has been in the financial services industry since 1981, focusing on retirement income planning as well as investment and estate planning. Mark is the owner of Cornerstone Advisors and is a certified financial planning professional, as well as a retirement income certified professional. Mark speaks to many public and industry groups on retirement issues. So we know that you're going to find today's show really interesting. Now, let me just get this across. Since the legal department is here and we're sitting across the table from a lawyer, I have to say, if we talk about any securities and investment advisory services offered solely through Ameritas Investment Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. Have I fulfilled that legal requirement, Joe?
I don't know. I'm one of these lawyers that don't know a lot about SEC laws, nor do I have any desire to learn. Just learning tax law, I can't imagine having to deal with SEC law. Mm-hmm. But Mark, this is a world you live in, and you have to deal with lots of regulatory agencies, I assume.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And first, let me thank you for having me back. I had a great time last time. Excited to hear that it was a well-received program. And Susan, thank you for also inviting me back. Talking to people about retirement planning, about what needs to be done, is truly one of the exciting parts of my career. And I look forward to today and trying to give your listeners a few more ideas and try to assuage some of their fears about going into retirement, or if they're already there, ways to make it just a little bit better.
Well, so then let's make some assumptions in this conversation about what are the circumstances of most of our listeners. And let's first talk about those who are fairly close to retirement. In other words, for the most part, I think we don't have people who are 10, 15, 20 years out. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking many are mid-50s and up. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk first about the people who've not yet retired, what they need to do. And then let's allow time to talk about those who may have recently retired and about any suggestions you might have for them. So let's start out with that person who, let's say is around 55 years old. They hope to retire by early 60s, maybe mid-60s. And we can assume that they've had something in place, but maybe not a whole lot. Knowing no more than I've just told you, what are some suggestions that come to mind, Mark?
Well, so Joe, the first thing, and when we look at people like that, and just stealing the phrase, we call that the retirement red zone, where you're about 10 years from retirement or closer. And so in the retirement red zone, one of the first things we want to look at is how much have you actually saved? Because in this day and age, most people don't have a pension. A pension is a way that a company guarantees you income for the rest of your life.
That went away with like the 70s or 80s?
I think early 80s.
Early 80s, absolutely. We created 401ks, which are the most common. And just to make your listeners' heads hurt, we have 403b for the nonprofit, 457 for the government. But those are all plans where the companies took the liability off of themselves to guarantee you a retirement and put it back on your shoulders. So retirement these days, which lasts a whole lot longer, is a whole lot more on your shoulders to make sure it works. So we start by seeing how much have you saved towards retirement so far. Now, perfect world, we got you when you were in your early 20s and taught you how to save. Reality is almost nobody saved when they should. So now we've got to get them to accelerate that savings program.
Well, that was when we were going to live forever, right?
Exactly. We didn't know any better then.
And in addition to that, we're all going to get rich in our 50s and it's going to be unimportant.
Because we were going to retire millionaires.
We were all going to buy Microsoft stock when we were 22 and it was just going to go through the roof and we'd have nothing to worry about because we looked just like Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, real life caught up with us. Now we're 55, 60 years old. We're going, hey, we're starting to get tired and we'd like to slow down. Can we? So what we need to look at is how much we've saved and at the same time, what are our expenses? Now, the good news is the lower your income, the more of it that's going to be made up by guaranteed government program called Social Security. The more you make, the less Social Security is going to make up for and the more you've got to make up for yourself. Now, let's talk about Social Security just for a second, because I know one of the big questions I get is, can I count on Social Security at all? I know it's going away. Well, the good news is, if you look at the actual report from the trustees from the Social Security Administration, Social Security is not going away.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've heard consultants and experts recently who focused on, they say the real concern is not Social Security, its viability, but it's Medicare.
Absolutely. And you're 100% on spot. Medicare is in far greater trouble than is Social Security. Now, the good news is that the government is doing some things to limit the damage of Medicare, and that's with what we call the Medicare Advantage programs. Now, they may not be the right choice for your clients or mine, but they are one of the government's attempts at limiting the liability to make the program more viable. So while Congress needs to do far more, they're at least doing something.
Yeah, pushing people into more of a managed care arrangement. It's more efficient.
More efficient. Private insurance companies do a much better job of trying to keep you healthy, which means smaller expenses instead of the big surprises from the heart attack, the stroke, et cetera. But that also limits your options as an individual on where you can seek your health care.
So then, let's go then with this hypothetical 55-year-old person. As you describe them, they've not done a lot of saving. They've probably done something. They probably have something in a 401k or an IRA, we can assume. But I can't help but think that concern has to weigh heavily on everyone, given the interest rate, the earnings that have been available. I mean, the stock market certainly has done well, but people even watch it with discomfort as it keeps escalating. But meanwhile, we look at interest rates that have been near zero. And in Europe, they have been zero or negative. And in the U.S., so low that people are wondering, well, gee, with this pile of money, how am I going to generate much income if the best interest rate is 1%?
That's an excellent question, Joe. First thing you need to understand is that historically, taking just an interest rate has never worked for you in retirement. You've always had to be invested in the stock market as well as in what we call the fixed income, whether that's a bond from Ford Motor Company or that is a CD from your local bank. You want a diversification of the two. General rule of thumb is 60% in equities, 40% into what we call fixed income. Without that, you will never outpace inflation and taxes combined. And that means that you're losing money every year, even though it doesn't look like it in your bank account.
Yeah, and let me emphasize that so people get what you just said, that, I mean, virtually any calculation that you do that's fair-minded over the last 50 years plus is going to show that money in the equities in the stock market have consistently done better than simply an interest rate in savings, consistently, and substantially different return over a period of time.
That's absolutely correct. And when you look at it, to take it even to a further level, what we always have to look at is that inflation. If you go back to the late 70s, early 80s, buying a house, you got almost an 18% interest rate on your loan. Well, then if you were making 18% on your money, you were still at a real return of zero. Right now, if you can make 3.5% and get a 3.5% loan, you're at the same zero. So while rates look really low today, what we care about is that inflation rate. Now, I'm going to take you off topic for 1 second, and we'll come back to this, but inflation is really important because for senior citizens, those 65 plus, there are areas that inflate faster than they do for the general public, healthcare being the big one. So we need to remember that as later in the conversation we talk about healthcare, because we need to plan for that. But bringing it back to just inflation versus what I'm earning on my money, it's all about I've got a dollar today. What do I need tomorrow to buy the same goods and services that I'm buying today with that dollar? And that's where planning starts to come in.
And I think that we should also emphasize that people should not be lulled into a sense of security about inflation, because it has been comparatively low in recent years, other than particular sectors such as healthcare, as you mentioned. But the bottom line is that from a historical perspective, this is an anomaly, what we've seen, right?
It is absolutely true.
And we're going to see inflation come back, just like night follows day. It's going to happen. But let me be the devil's advocate here. And you and I both, especially you, can point to charts and all sorts of quantitative evidence to show that over time you win by staying in the stock market and in equities versus income securities or income sources or savings accounts. But that's over the long run. And was it who was it? Marx. Was it Marx that the brother, the comedian Marx?
Groucho Marx.
It wasn't he the one that said in the long run we're all dead? So the point was that in this case, if people are, say, 55 to 60 years old, they're thinking about entering the market, and they're following what is you and I would argue is good, reasonable advice, but yet they're going in at a point where, and I haven't asked you this, it seems to me that it's dizzyingly high right now. And I wonder if on this particular occasion, given their shorter time horizon, whether it makes sense for them to hold back and wait to see if this is going to deflate the prices, or would you suggest that they simply go ahead and look, stick with this principle, ignore what the market's doing now, don't think about it, just put the money in and keep putting it in consistently?
So first key is I've got to stress that each individual is different. But because we're talking to a broad audience today, using the broad generalizations,
yes,
I'm going to say you want to get into the market. Number one reason is statistically, and I know we're back to statistics,
yeah,
but statistically, if you and your spouse were both 65 today, there's a 50% chance that one of you sees your 90th birthday. That's 25 years from now. So we're investing for the long run, not for the short run.
Now, this is a very good point you're making, because a lot of people make the assumption when they're advising older people that they're going to be gone in 10 years.
Yeah, at 70.
And it could be 30 years if they're 60, as you point out.
We're right now, it's still a 20% likelihood that a spouse and her husband or a spouse and his wife, one of them is seeing their 95th birthday. It's 50% for their 90th for one of them to make it. It's 20% for 95. That means we've got 30 plus years in retirement. Now, if you're investing to buy a pickup truck 5 years from now when you retire, we invest one way because a market cycle is typically 10 years. But if you're investing for the rest of your life and you're going to spend almost as long or maybe longer in retirement than you did during your working years, you've got to invest with that idea in mind.
If you're healthy enough to need a pickup truck when you're 65, that's a good sign,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Absolutely.
And that makes me just a little uncomfortable with what my logical mind says, that over a relatively long period, and certainly, you know, a couple decades easily is a long period of time, that you'll recover if you don't get in, if you don't time it correctly. And I also know that all the best thinkers say you cannot time the market. Mm-hmm. Don't try. And yet I still look at this market. It makes me nervous.
Well, so personal opinion, I don't believe the market is all that high. We're hitting all-time highs. But those all-time highs are absolute highs, not relative. And what I mean by that, when I got into the business, the market was at 780 on the Dow Jones back in 1981.
And you're not 90 years old. Right?
No. Fortunately, I started when I was 19. But the key is the market moved 10% back then. It moved 78 points.
Yeah.
Now, a 1,500-point drop a few weeks ago was about 3%.
Yeah.
So what we need to look at is how is the market valued? And there are differing opinions on how you value the market.
You're right.
But when you look at the valuations, we're either a little cheap, we're reasonable, we're a little expensive, depending upon the person. No one that I've talked to that I respect thinks we're ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
And now, if you're agreeing that you're going to be in for the next 30 years potentially, then you're absolutely right. You don't time the market. You can't time the market. You either get in today with both feet, or you can always dollar cost average in. And that's if you're in a 401k plan or any other retirement plan, they're literally doing dollar cost averaging for you, where every week, every 2 weeks, every month, depending upon your paycheck, you're putting money into the market systematically. That means you're buying at the highs, the lows, and everywhere in between, and you're smoothing out, and you didn't care. In fact, mm-hmm. This is counterintuitive, but I tell all my retirement plan clients, you actually want the market to fall because then you're buying on sale. Mm-hmm. And I always use the example of Walmart. When you walk into Walmart and you see the rollback price, what do? You buy more of it because it's on sale. When you walk into the stock market and you see a rollback price, you want to sell what you have and run away. Doesn't make sense. You want to buy more when it's cheap and then hope that it's up when you're ready to get out. And if you're taking income during retirement, you're taking your money out systematically just as you put it in, which smooths it out again a little bit. Not perfectly, but it does smooth it out.
Hmm. That is good reasoning. I hadn't heard it put quite that way, but that's a good argument. So then let's go back then to this 55-year-old person. You would suggest that their investments be primarily equities. As a generalization, you don't know their specific circumstances, but as a generalization, mostly equities. What other steps would you tell them to do if their plan is to retire by 65?
Okay, so first thing I want to do when I sit down with one of my clients or potential clients is to figure out how much risk they can handle in the market. So if the market's falling 1,500 points today, are you bothered? Are you upset? Or are you on the phone screaming like Chicken Little, the world is ending? That determines how aggressive we can be with your money, because we need you to stay in. So if you're very scared, we start you off with less risk than maybe you need, because we need you to stay in. If you're not skittish, we can be more aggressive. Next thing, before we start picking the investments, I'm going to make you go through, and I apologize, but it's a very painful process. We're going to build a budget. We need to know where
that B word.
Oh, no. Spending plan. We're going to call it something different.
Exactly. We need to know where all your money's going now, A, because we most likely need to find more money in that budget to save towards retirement. But more importantly, we need to know how much money we need at retirement and into retirement.
But isn't it realistic, though, that given a number of factors we've talked about here and a few others, one is that people are going to live presumably longer on average, and which means they'll also be healthier for longer on average. We have a low interest rate environment. We have people who may not have saved as much as they should have if they could turn the hands of time back. So would this not suggest to some people that they plan on continuing to work part-time beyond that retirement age? In other words, that they maybe choose something that perhaps is very different from what they're doing, that they can enjoy, but nonetheless that they commit to generating some income to supplement this picture that we've been describing?
So, Joe, have you been standing over my shoulder while I've been advising my clients? Because literally, we talk about pre-retirement, semi-retirement, full retirement, and then, and we try to fancy it up, but old age. Because what we want you to do in most cases is work a little longer if possible, because every 6 months or a year you work a little longer, that increases your Social Security, it allows you to save a little more, and that's one less year that you're in retirement drawing money out.
Now, do you get pushback from clients when they've maybe fantasized since their 30s of this time when they'll be sitting on this imaginary beach?
I'm going to travel and have a house on the beach.
Joe, I absolutely get pushback. That's one of the biggest pushbacks I get. I had someone very recently, 61 years old, doesn't really like their job. I'm sitting there telling them, really ought to work till 65 because of Medicare. I got the email last week. Okay, I've put in for retirement. What are we going to do about health care? So, yes.
Solve this for me.
Yes.
The reality of the situation is we're going to get pushback, but we're still tasked with giving clients the best advice we possibly can. Just like when you sit down with somebody and you discuss their elder care planning or their estate planning, and you get pushback about, gee, there's so much work involved and so much documents to create. Can't I just put everything in a TOD, transfer on death? You can, but that's not the right thing to do. Yeah. And it's the same thing here is I'm going to tell you to work longer. Then I'm going to tell you to go into semi-retirement where maybe you're working a few days a week, or if you've got a better job, you're doing consulting here and there, but you're still bringing in some income. It's also allowing you, I think, just as importantly, to experience retirement. Because I really believe most of us look at retirement just like we look at that 1 or 2 weeks of vacation every year.
Mm-hmm. Well, can't the math justify maybe choosing to do 2 years longer versus part-time for a decade plus? I mean, I've not done that math, but I'm sure you know generally how that works out. Is it often better to bite the bullet, continue at maybe a very high income for two additional years even, and that would allow you perhaps to not have to work part-time for the next 10?
You're absolutely correct. Now, what I do with my clients is I try to find the lowest pain points to get to retirement. So, number one, I could work a few years longer. Number two, I could spend less money in retirement. Number three, I could take more risk in my investment portfolio. What I'll do is say, instead of us picking one of those and going all in, why don't we take a little of each of them? So instead of maybe working 3 years longer, let's work a year and a half longer. Let's, instead of saving 20% of our salary, instead of the 5% we're saving now, let's save 10% of our salary. And instead of cutting our spending by 20% in retirement. Let's just cut it by 8%. Now, those are generalizations, but none of those are as painful as if you, quote, go cold turkey on just one of the items. And by figuring out with you individually which ones are lower pain points, which are greater pain points, and then mixing and matching to make the most attractive option for you. But you're spot on when you say working those few extra years is going to save the part-time work. But most of my clients, when they get to retirement, they want to be active in doing something.
And it's healthy to be active.
It's absolutely healthy. Therefore, putting you in a position because you worked long enough, you saved enough money, you figured out your budget so that you can have what we call a work optional lifestyle. That means that when you're in your 60s, you can either work because you enjoy it, or you can do volunteer at your church, at the local food bank, wherever it is. You mentioned taxes earlier. I know some former CPAs who love at tax time helping out the underprivileged because they can do that because they have a work optional lifestyle. So building the plan so that you don't have to work, you still want to be doing something almost every day. We need a purpose in life. We need a reason to get up in the morning. And having retirement as a two-week vacation, typically 3 or 4 months in, you're going, wait a minute, what's my purpose? I need to find one. So if we can help you find it before you retire, it's just that much better.
So let's take a break here. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about housing. Many people have an important part of their plan on retirement is to think about where they're going to live. Some intend to live locally, some intend to move. So let's see what our expert has to say for people who are concerned about where they're going to live when they retire. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
We're back with Elder Talk and our guest, Mark Werner, the expert in terms of financial advice for people thinking about retiring and having retired. So we were talking about, first of all, how do people afford it? Those planning who are within 10 years or so of retirement, what are some of the things they should consider? But one of the topics that I know dominates the thoughts of people as they get older is where they're going to live. Both as they're nearing retirement, but also in early retirement, they're still struggling between several possibilities. Often you hear them thinking, should I sell my house, move into something smaller? At a minimum, there's often that discussion, but still having a house. And then there's those who say, no, I want to move into a condo or I want to move into an assisted living. And then finally, there are those who consider moving to a place such as Florida or Arizona. So talk a little bit about what you commonly encounter on this topic and what advice you often give.
Well, so on the topic of living, one of the keys is as we get older, most of us don't like change. And so the comfort...
That sounds familiar.
I was going to say, we've talked about that before.
The ability to stay in your house as long as possible for most of us is the right decision to make. And that means that we do not look at our house as a financial asset. It is a piece of property. It's where we live. We know we've got to live somewhere.
And don't build a plan based on accessing that cash.
Correct. Now, for some of us, we want to move closer to kids because in this generation, everybody's spread out across the country. Others may want to move as far away from kids as possible.
I was wondering if there was that category.
There is. And so in both of those, you may be going to, as you said, Florida or Arizona. Now, one of the questions becomes, where are you going to live? And I'll give you a real life example. I've got somebody who can sell their house in St. Louis when they retire, move to a condo in Florida that's about the same cost. So they're going to just swap one living arrangement for the other. That's great. Until we get to health care. And when we get to health care, we were discussing long-term care for them. Well, Florida right now today is almost $10,000 a month for a nursing home versus $6,000 in St. Louis. So when you're looking at where you're going to live, it's more than just the location and the housing.
And while it might be have been okay, if let's say you're early 60s, you're very functional and independent, and you decide that you can move to Florida and you can afford it and you move there. But I know from the situation with my family that as their health, they lived in Florida, did a very similar thing. And as they were fine, and matter of fact, they'd probably say among their best years for the last 10 plus years when they were living in Florida, they had a wonderful time. But then they came to a point where they were more dependent on getting someone else's assistance as they've gotten older now in their mid-80s. And so suddenly now it makes more sense to perhaps be back closer to the kids that wasn't necessary early on. Do you see that pattern?
I see that pattern, and that's why I'm a big fan of contingency plans where you hope that you get to move to Florida. You hope that at age 95, you're still going strong and you've never needed help, but you have the contingency plan and you and your loved ones have agreed on the front end what's going to happen if something goes wrong and your plan is not following your anticipated track.
Or what will happen in that next stage.
Right.
I guess I'm rather thinking something going wrong, but you know, they would know that there's a stage will come probably if they're fortunate enough to live when they may need to, as you suggest, have this plan, this next phase planned in advance.
Right. And taking those stages and taking it back to your original question, Joe, one of the things I've seen recently from a few of my clients that I think is genius. Now, I'm using one example in particular. They are going to retire in about 3 years. Their plan is for the first 2 years of retirement, they've got a few places, two places in Florida, one place, Lake of the Ozarks, and I think the fourth is in Georgia, that they're interested in living. They're going to move to each one of those places and rent for 6 months to see if they like the local community and everything else. And at the end of that 2 years, their plan is to pick out of those four and buy somewhere versus you just pack up and just because you loved somewhere for that 1 or 2 weeks of vacation, you may not be as enamored with it for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And so by setting the money aside, selling your house, uprooting yourself, but then having that plan to look at different options, I just think that's genius. Now, it's not going to work for everybody. But if you're thinking about staying in St. Louis, for example, great. If you're thinking about moving to Florida, that might be a wonderful plan. Rent your house out for a year while you go down there and rent somewhere down there for the year. Decide whether you really like it. If you do, sell your place up here and move down there.
But now people who are capable of following a plan as sophisticated as that probably were also pretty good about saving for retirement. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
That's unfortunately absolutely true. They were also better at having a spending plan all along. So when you ask them where the money's going, they have a very good idea now where the money's going. But those are the ones that, and I'm sorry, if you haven't done anything and you're not willing to start to do some of that planning now and saving now, you're not going to have the options when you do get to retirement.
Well,
now,
that's a question that I actually have. I've run into several people in just even in the last couple of days that are probably in their mid-50s, which we were talking about this person being 55, and they really have not much of a plan, maybe a little bit in a 401k, but they really have not done anything. And I talked to someone just yesterday and she was going, I don't know where to start. I mean, I guess the answer
surprises you, doesn't it?
It does, because I tend to be a planner. So you can ask my husband. I tend to plan this and this and this and this.
And these people, though, these are not people who you would think would be not responsible in those
ways.
No,
they're responsible and they're living their lives and they're raising their kids. And they. I don't think it's on purpose. I think it's neglect necessarily, but I think it's just they've gotten busy with life and they've gotten busy maybe taking an extra vacation when they wanted to go with their kids rather than put it aside. And they don't know where to start. And so I guess the message to them is start, at least do something.
And you're absolutely correct. First, it's not their fault, because we all like to procrastinate on things, and retirement doesn't seem all that real until you're very close, and it's all of a sudden, oh gosh, what do I do? Well, that's where, whether you can do it on your own or you seek out a professional, you need to get started. Now, get started may be as simple as, I've got to get my budget under control. Or I've got to start saving money. Saving $10 a month is not going to get you to retirement, but it's better than not saving $10 a month. So doing something, taking action, and if you go to a professional, they may be able to help you identify what is the least painful way, the most efficient way to get started and get something going and help you determine how much of your retirement. Because Joe brought up earlier, working those two extra years or working the 10 extra years part-time. Well, if you're 55 or 56 and you start looking at stuff now, it may be two extra years of work, 10 extra years part-time. If you come to me at 65 and say, I'm retiring in 3 months, what do I do? It may be you're never stopping working because you waited. So wherever you are, if you're a year from retirement, we need to get you in to talk to somebody to get started. If you're 10 years, you're better off. If you're one of the unique ones who is a real planner, you're listening to this show and you're 20, we congratulate you already, and you're going to be in probably very great shape. But for the rest of us, the real people in the world, it's doing something, doing anything is better than inaction.
And assuming then they're willing to take some action, but let's first not assume that for the sake of discussion. So there is a viable option for such a person, and that's that they just continue working. And they'll work as long as they can work, and hope that at the time that they can no longer work, that there's some sort of long-term care available for them, maybe in a facility or whatever it might be. But I don't see any other option for someone who hasn't positioned themselves to have some savings or something supplemental to Social Security. And so one option is, I guess you would agree with me, that they have the work till I die plan, or work till I can't work anymore plan. And it's not the plan we want. But then I guess if you think of it in a more accordion way, then you know, for everyone there's an answer at which point they're going to be able to retire. It's just that they're going to have to work a certain number of years to get there, right? And you could probably do that math. You could say to somebody who's broke at 58 and that they want to have some years of not working, you can say, okay, then here, I can do those calculations. And maybe the answer for them will be, well, you work till you're 73. So, you know, for you, you're 65 is age 73.
Yeah.
And so at 73, you can retire. And that's going to have to be your plan. I mean, have you had that conversation with clients?
Unfortunately, I have. My clients are all over the board. I have the ones that Susan's talking about. They've got $2,000-$3,000 saved up, and they're in their mid-60s thinking about retiring any day. Well, $2,000 or $3,000 at even 5% is going to generate $100, $150 a year in income.
Are they thinking Social Security though is more than? Were they thinking they'd receive more from Social Security than they in fact will?
I've actually found that in most of the cases, they just have found thinking about retirement as unpleasant, so they've literally just not thought about it. If you put your head under the covers, it doesn't exist.
Now look, people have to accept some responsibility on that. And I tend to prefer the view that we have some control over our lives. And I mean, I think we should insist on that, you know, but with that comes some responsibility. But it's like estate planning. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who, they were good people. It's not that they didn't care about their kids, but, you know, for one reason or another, suddenly they're dead. And then their kids and their family have this mess around them. And they're trying to figure out, how did mom or dad or both let this happen? And it wasn't that they didn't love their kids. They just preferred to not think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at Prince most recently. That estate is $100+ million, and he had no estate planning. Elvis Presley lost 75% of his estate to taxes because he had not done the proper planning.
And he had loved ones. And I don't know about Prince, but now, you're right. It's shocking.
And so you and I don't typically deal with that $100 million account. So estate planning for most of our people means getting the limited assets that our clients have worked long and hard for to be distributed properly. And if you love your spouse, if you love your children, you're going to do the planning for retirement so that you do not become a burden on them, and B, during that planning, you're going to do your estate planning, which is not just to avoid taxation, but to make sure that your money works as hard for you in retirement as you worked for it during your working years.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things that people have to require of themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, going to the dentist isn't pleasant, but
I think you have to look long term. And I think that's where so many people struggle. I mean, I'm not quite mid-50s, but almost. But I think
you don't look it, so that's what counts.
But I think a lot of times it's just that hard thing of, I don't want to think about this. They just get busy living life. And so I think that's where people are.
And I think you're absolutely right on, Susan. I can do the math. Given any situation, I can tell you what it's going to take to get to where you want to be, wherever it is, very easily. I can tell you how to invest your money to achieve that goal. I can tell you when to take your Social Security. I can tell you which Medicare plan is the right one for you. But it's that life is getting in the way, and we have to, as Joe said, take personal responsibility for our situation and say, okay, I may not have done everything properly to this point, but I can always recover. Maybe not 100%, but I can always recover. I can always make things dramatically better than they are today if I only step up to the plate today and start doing something.
And that's an important message. I mean, among the messages that people will remember walking away from this show, I would want perhaps at the top to be the point that wherever you are, it's not that it can't be fixed. And we gave an example of someone in their early 60s who says, you know, I want to have some years of retirement. Well, there's an answer for that. And it's going to require continued working for a number of years beyond 65, but there's an answer for that. And if your health holds out, which means doing some other things in addition to financial things, this show isn't dedicated to that. But remember, you got to put these factors together. Everything we're talking about on this show is meaningless if, in fact, you're blowing off entirely cancer prevention, heart disease prevention, mm-hmm. all those things that you can do to give you years in your retirement. But anyway, assuming that that's done, there is an answer for a person wherever they are. The important thing is that they have that epiphany, that they be knocked off the horse, so to speak, and that they suddenly, you know, recognize the importance of this matter and perhaps urgency, depending on their age, and they're willing to take the right steps. So it is a positive message. But it's only positive if at this moment going forward that you make the right decision and then start correcting it, right? You would amen that?
I would amen that 100 times over. It's starting. It's doing something. We may not be able to give you the perfect retirement, but we can give you a dignified retirement if you got started.
Yeah, and in some ways we could make it a sort of perfect retirement. By that I mean, if it turns out that it's good for them to keep working for some reasons beyond financial, you know, and you just made that argument, Mark, very well. So there's lots of good that comes from continuing meaningful activity. So for someone to conclude, well, you know, I should continue doing that anyway. Well, it might turn out that, in fact, you have to do that. Yeah. So that's not a bad thing. But my point is that I know that there are a lot of people listening that Mark's been talking to today, and they're in their 50s, some are even in their 60s, and they're saying this is hopeless. But the good news is that if you go to somebody such as Mark, I'm not having him on to sell his services, and I have no relationship with him financially at all, but I believe in him, and I believe in the quality of his skills. So if you go to someone such as Mark, in other words, a financial planner properly trained and certified, they know what they're doing, and they believe in what they're doing. If you go to them and say, give me a plan, mm-hmm. there is a plan for all of you.
Right.
But it'll be contingent on a few things. You'll have to be able to work a little longer for some of you. But the point is, it's a plan, and it'll be a good plan. And it might turn out to have been the best plan that even you ever could have devised.
And I'm completely with you. What I want is the sooner you get in to see somebody, the better off you're going to be, because we want you to have that work optional lifestyle. I personally believe you should be active and working in your 80s, but it's with something you love, not necessarily because you have to do something. So your ability to do nonprofit, volunteer work, or work for a salary should be just because you picked the job or activity, not because you had to. But the sooner you get started, the more likely it is that we can get you into that position where you get to pick. Either way, it's going to be good for your health to continue doing something. But if we can get you so that it's purely for your health and not financial, that's just that much better.
Yeah, and many people, I think, love to have a plan. I mean, they insist on a plan in other areas of their life, and they feel better. They sleep better because they feel that they have some plan of action by which they can, base their assumptions about the future. So I think that those who don't feel drawn to a plan, they have other ways to motivate themselves. But either way, you would think that people would recognize that this issue is very important. Do we have 2 minutes left?
We have about 2 minutes left.
Okay. Can you make some comments just in that amount of time about those people who want to allow for the possibility of assisted living of some sort or some sort of institutional living? You know, what comments can you make to them in a minute or so?
Okay, so in this day and age, if you're looking for assisted living, that's basically going to be out of your savings. Medicaid does not pick up assisted living, nor does most long-term care insurance policies. So we need to save for that and plan for that accordingly. Now, if it's advanced care, we still have some long-term care policies. We have something called a partnership policy. Don't have enough time to discuss that today, but if you're talking to an insurance agent, a financial planner, or anybody else, always ask if you're looking at long-term care, if it's partnership eligible. That puts a lot more money in your pocket. And it's a vital tool that the government actually created. I think it was a great thing that they did about 8-10 years ago for us.
Yeah, it was various states adopted it. It's subsidized in part by the federal government, and it incentivizes people to get long-term care insurance. So it requires certain common denominators among the policies, which are very good for the insured.
And it puts money back in your loved one's pocket at the end of the day if you use the partnership, because you've gone in partnership with the state.
It's really a great concept. It is. And I'm glad you mentioned that. I hadn't thought about that. But it's a wonderful program. And so you're an advocate of some sort of long-term care insurance if people can afford it.
If people can afford it and people have a little bit of assets, absolutely.
All right. We've had a wonderful discussion. Mark Werner, thank you for being our guest. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. See you next time.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.